This is Main Street on Prairie Public, and today we begin with a look at hunger across the plains. The Great Plains Food Bank distributes more than 14 million pounds of food each year, reaching thousands of children and families, many in rural communities where access can be limited. And a bit later, Prairie Beat marks the 10-year anniversary of Fargo Police Officer Jason Mosier's line of duty death as the community gathers to remember his service and sacrifice. And then later, we'll step inside the North Dakota Women's Business Center. They help both men and women explore how coaching, funding access, and community connections are helping entrepreneurs strengthen local economies across our state.
This is another edition of Prairie Plates served weekly here on Main Street, here on Prairie Public. I'm your host, Rick Eon. And this week, we want to highlight some of the food nonprofits in the region, specifically one nonprofit, the Great Plains Food Bank. And we have some guests here today to talk about what the Great Plains Food Bank does and a little bit about their Giving Hearts Day campaign, givinghearts.org, if you feel like giving a few dollars to the Great Plains Food Bank or to Prairie Public. But let's welcome Rebecca Knutson and Alicia Tremert today from the Great Plains Food Bank. Welcome.
Thank you, Rick, for having us from one philanthropic organization to another. We appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for being here. And we'll talk a little bit about what the food bank does, your Giving Hearts Day campaign, what you two do at the food bank specifically. I have a backstory with the food bank. It is a good one. But I used to work at Lutheran Social Services in the late 90s, and I'd go over to the food bank quite often. And your organization has grown since then.
We have, and we've been doing the work of ending hunger for 43 years.
And what are some of the stats, Rebecca, that you brought today?
Well, I was just visiting with you about, we have new stats that came out for our calendar year, and some of what you were talking about way back in 1986. 1 million pounds were distributed annually in 1986. And now we distribute about 14 million pounds throughout a year.
Wow.
And so 1 million pounds plus each month is not unusual. And it's fantastic that we have the ability to do that. And it's sad at the same time that there's the need.
Well, the Great Plains Food Bank does much more than just distribute food. What all do you do?
So our main purpose is to get food to those who need it, and we distribute food all the way across North Dakota and Clay County, Minnesota. We're the only food bank. We do that mostly through a distribution network of partner agencies, so food pantries, for example, but we also have a lot of different ways that we get food to people, mobile food pantries, Kitchen Coalition, backpack program, youth summer meals, and Alicia's going to talk about that a little bit later in the program. So our main goal is to get food to people who need it, but we source the food and distribute the food at a large scale where we source food at the bulk and in the thousands of pounds. So think about us like as a warehouse and a distribution center.
Let's talk a little bit about what you do at the food bank. What's your title and what's your role there?
I'm the corporate relations officer. I've been there for 3 years. Mainly, I work with corporations and large organizations to help fulfill their philanthropic interests in the community and find ways for them to engage and execute those interests. And that can be philanthropic in terms of financial, volunteerism, lots of different ways that organizations and businesses can engage with the food bank.
And a big thank you goes to those folks that help you out.
For sure, for sure. We couldn't do it without our financial partners, so many, and individuals as well.
And how many partner agencies or which partner agencies do you serve, food pantries, et cetera?
And we're a statewide organization, as I mentioned. I know we're sitting here in Fargo doing this interview. We have over 200 pantries across the state and Clay County, Minnesota, that we work with. So it is immense, and those locations receive about 88% of their food through the Great Plains Food Bank.
And then who does the food bank help exactly? You know, what population?
Right. So any one of our neighbors who's food insecure, and that means that you just don't know where your next meal is coming from for the most part. Seniors, children, unfortunately, 1 in 4 we serve are children. Of course, no one needs to go hungry or wonder where their next meal comes from, and it's sad that 1 in 4 are children.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge service to this region.
It is, and really without the food banking and food pantry connection, the food would not get to those who need it in as efficient a manner as possible.
And Alicia, let's talk a little bit about serving children in with your role at the Great Plains Food Bank, if you want to tell folks what your title is and what you do.
Yeah, I am the Childhood Hunger Programs Manager here at the Great Plains Food Bank. And three of the childhood programs we have are the School Pantry Program, the Backpack Program, and the Summer Food Service Program. School pantries can run kind of similar to a pantry you see out in your community. They help service not only the children in the school, but the families as a whole. And then the Backpack Program is strictly just for the weekend to kind of help tide those kids over between those school meals on Fridays and Mondays. And then our Summer Food Service Program runs June, July, and August to help rural communities across North Dakota access food that they normally would have during the school day.
Do you have any stats on how many children you serve?
Yeah, so our backpack program is actually serving 6,697 kids weekly across 141 schools in the state of North Dakota and then Clay County as well.
And that's all over North Dakota?
I'm guessing. Yes, yep. We're across North Dakota and then we go into Dilworth and Moorhead as well.
What's the most unique school district you serve?
Ooh, I would say Dickinson Backpack Program. Kristen Seeks is a huge champion out there and runs an incredible backpack program for that school district.
Do you serve any Indigenous reservations too?
Yes, so we do have a few school pantries and Standing Rock Reservation and then Spirit Lake as well.
Well, what does hunger look like for the kids here, not just nationally, but locally?
Yeah, a lot of our communities are extremely rural with little access to food resources in their area. Not all communities have a grocery store, which is not common knowledge in North Dakota. So transportation is the biggest thing. Sometimes it takes 30 minutes to an hour to get to a grocery store or to find that affordable food for a family to grab. So we just try to have multiple programs, shelf-stable foods, school pantry programs, and then specifically the summer food service program. We provide 7-day shelf-stable meal boxes so that a family only has to come in once a week, grab that food, and then they have food for the week for their child.
And do you physically travel out to distribute these food items in rural areas?
I have been on site for a few, but we have great champions in all of these communities that work with us to help provide these programs alongside of us in partnership.
Because rural areas without a grocery store, they would call that a food desert.
Yes, yes.
And we do see that quite a bit in North Dakota.
Absolutely, especially on our western side.
Yeah. Well, how does the backpack program work? We talked a little bit about that earlier.
Yeah, our backpack program works kind of two different ways. We have local packing in our volunteer center, and that product goes out to the 3 school districts in the area locally. And then we also have statewide backpack that we use a third party that ships in ready to ship meals, and then we can get that out to them quickly just because we don't have the space in our warehouse to do packing for the entire state backpack program. So hopefully with our new warehouse, we will have the space for that.
Well, I've been in that warehouse recently, and it's packed with food. I mean, you really get the job done. It's incredible what you do over there. Well, in these backpacks, what comes in these backpacks?
Yeah, so they're all going to be shelf-stable products, 2 breakfast items, 2 entrees, fruit cup, juice, and then snacks as well. So the kiddos can eat it during the weekend, and then if they ever need some snacks and have some left over, they can bring it right to school and have a snack in their bag as well.
And I've heard that during the summer, hunger often gets worse. Why is that, and how can you help out with that?
Yeah, so Summer Food Service Program is one of the biggest programs with that. Schools can run their own hot meals during the week, which is a great resource, but not every family has transportation to get to those locations to get that meal. So that's why we decided to do a shelf-stable box to kind of hit those rural pockets of North Dakota that wouldn't have access to a school location with a hot meal every day.
And how can a Giving Hearts Day donation help with this program or mitigate child hunger around the region?
Yeah, even with a $50 donation on Giving Hearts Day, that can provide a weekend bag for a child for the entire school year. So for 35 weeks that you can provide a bag for a child.
Wow, that really has impact then.
Absolutely.
Well, Rebecca, let's talk a little bit more about corporate giving, Giving Hearts Day. What are you all doing to raise some funds?
Well, our goal, I'll tell you about that, for Giving Hearts Day is to bring in $1 million. Last year, we were successful at $1.2 million, thanks to so many generous donors all across the state and individuals and, you know, corporates and organizations. And so we have an aggressive direct marketing campaign. We gal that's on our team works with our firm, so many of you out there have probably received some direct marketing appeals and some phone calls or seen, you know, ads on social media. Thank you for putting up with all that and for, you know, activating and giving so that your donation can be matched on Giving Hearts Day. We have some phone calls going out also on Giving Hearts Day, and some of you might receive a text to give, you know, if you've given us your phone number and, you know, approve receiving a message from us. So lots of aggressive activities that go up until 11:59 p.m. on Giving Hearts Day, February 12th.
Well, you worked in politics as I did, and we know the fundraising never stops, right?
It never stops. It's just like we're counting dollars, and, you know, instead of votes. So we have to keep going until 11:59. I don't think Dakota Medical Foundation would be happy if we didn't either.
Well, that's a good way to put it. Well, along with these childhood hunger programs and your positions, what does this money go towards?
So programs just like what Alicia was talking about. So every Giving Hearts Day, the dollars that we raise are targeted towards those childhood programs, exactly like what Alicia talked about. So donors can feel confident if they are passionate about supporting children and making sure that that 1 in 4 number goes down, that their dollars are going to go to those kinds of programs, backpack, youth summer meals.
And you do have semis, box trucks, maintenance. You probably need to buy vehicles. Your drivers drive all over the region. You have to pay them.
Oh, yeah. We have about 48 full-time staff at Great Plains Food Bank. That includes everyone that works at Great Plains Food Bank, from a truck driver to Alicia to myself. And so those trucks, thank goodness we have them. They take a lot of upkeep. They travel over 200,000 miles a year all across, again, North Dakota and Clay County, Minnesota. So I'm amazed by all the individuals at the food bank. It's just an amazing group of people to work with to get this job done. And the folks who work on the logistics of our operation are just amazing to me. My mind is blown by the ability to organize, you know, getting so many thousands of pounds, millions of pounds of food out throughout a year, each month. A special thank you and shout out to anyone and everyone that worked through government shutdown time. That wasn't only in the food bank end. That shutdown affected, you know, everyone, darn near everyone. And we're working on making it through, and we're working on helping people to, you know, recover from what they had to go through. But our staff, too, worked extra on that. And kudos to them. And, you know, we have a great workplace at Great Plains Food Bank, and just so happy to be able to be part of the staff there, and happy to be part of working to end hunger with our community.
Well, and we're happy to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We know that you guys rely on dollars to keep, you know, this operation going here too at Prairie Public, and it's important to our community. So we're happy to join in partnership with you. Thank you so, so much.
Well, you're welcome. And we've both seen some funding cuts, which, you know, are challenging, but we're making do, and we're raising money, and folks are stepping up and being very generous. So.
Well, we really see that support come through. It is urgent all the time to be working to raise dollars to end hunger, and it's especially critical during times like a shutdown or COVID or, you know, flood relief. We helped with Hurricane Katrina. So food banks really are seen as a a go-to for some of the times that are the most critical for individuals to face.
Well, that's an important point. It really is. I mean, when you're in need, it's here for you, and the service is just incredible.
Yeah, it can't stop.
I just want to say that North Dakotans and Minnesotans are extremely generous.
They are.
I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's an outpouring. And for example, again, during the shutdown, the calls that came in to Great Plains Food Bank asking how can I help? It was just amazing and so wonderful. It's just so special. And we know individuals care and are concerned, and they have caring hearts. And we see it really comes through when there are those additional challenges that we all have to work through.
Well, Rebecca, Alicia, anything else you'd like to add?
We certainly are encouraging everyone to go to Giving Hearts Day. Search Great Plains Food Bank, search Prairie Public. Do that Thursday the 12th till 11:59 p.m. We're working towards our $1 million goal. 1 in 4 kids needing to receive service through Great Plains Food Bank. We're happy to provide service to those kids, and we'd love to shrink that and have those numbers be tighter. So with your support, we'll do that. Thank you so much.
Rebecca Knutson, Alicia Tremert with the Great Plains Food Bank, it's been great having you in.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you, thank you.
This is the latest edition of Prairie Plates. We'll talk to you next week.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Dr. Julie Peterman Bryant of the Bryant Clinic of Chiropractic and Acupuncture in Bismarck. Naturally working with people to feel better, be healthy, and live well at all ages.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and today is a reminder of the dangers those who serve face every day. 11 years ago, a Fargo police officer was gunned down while responding to a domestic incident. The department paused to mark the anniversary, and on this week's Prairie Beat, we'll take a look back at the death of Officer Jason Mosier.
Well, hey, I'm Eric Etheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We're back again for another episode of Prairie Beat,
our weekly news podcast from us here at Prairie Public.
So today, February 11th, is actually the 10-year anniversary of the line of duty death of Fargo Police Officer Jason Mosier. Now, most recently, a lot of us in the Fargo area specifically remember the tragic line of duty death of Officer Jake Walline, who was shot alongside two other officers who survived while responding to a traffic stop back in 2023. But before that, this community did experience what happened to Officer Mosier in 2016. And that was quite the event because it was the first time a Fargo police officer had died in the line of duty in 134 years.
Yeah, kind of innocence lost in a way for Fargo. I mean, thank goodness that's not something that happens often. And the second one that did happen, obviously, we all know the result was it saved probably a countless amount of lives in downtown Fargo. But thank God it's a rare occurrence. But a lot of the discourse around the Fargo police in the last nearly year that we've been talking about in this podcast has been, well, how safe is Fargo? We did have a whole episode about that after a couple of shootings last summer downtown and in other parts of Fargo. Officer-involved shootings are still pretty rare, as we mentioned, and despite any of those discussions and officer deaths, even more so.
The city of Fargo held a remembrance this morning for Officer Mosier.
Privileged today to welcome his father, David, mother, Karen, brother, Brian, sister, Michelle, Jason's former wife, Rachel, and her family. All of you are always in our thoughts and prayers. We appreciate your attendance and joining with us in recognizing Jason's service.
That was Fargo Police Chief Dave Zabolski. And after welcoming everyone to the remembrance, they played a video that kind of just gave a brief explanation of what happened the night Jason was killed. And obviously, law enforcement can respond to many very dangerous things in their job. But that night, they were called to a domestic dispute, which is actually one of the most dangerous situations to respond to.
The suspect, armed with multiple long guns, had barricaded himself inside the home and had threatened to shoot any officer who approached. As officers secured the perimeter, the suspect opened fire, striking Officer Mosier. He was rushed to the hospital where, despite every effort, he died on February 11th, 2016.
I recall that happening too, Danielle, and as was the case with Officer Jake Wallin, who more recently was killed in the line of duty, there's that initial shock and heartbreak, obviously, but then there's that moment of like, okay, this community has been through something tough. What do we do now?
When that was all happening, I was, of course, doing the news stories on that, and we made sure to cover his memorial service, which was very large. The police chief at the time was Chief Dave Todd. He had this to say at the funeral.
We have a hole in our hearts that we don't know how to fill. Jason's no longer there, getting changed into his uniform. There's an empty seat in briefing where he sat with his shift. And after today, Edward 143 will be a call sign that will never be assigned again. How do we fill that hole in our hearts?
Today at the remembrance, Fargo officer Mark Ranum, who was classmates with Jason Moser at the police academy and worked with him on shift, he got up and spoke. And he said he's wondered about that as well. In the 10 years since what happened to Jason, he says he hasn't been forgotten. He shared a few insider stories about Jason, you know, just some of the actions he took on different calls, about some of the gossiping he apparently liked to do around the police station. But he also talked about how passionate Jason was about his family and how he enjoyed police work and serving his community.
Jason loved being a police officer. Jason was a selfless person who was willing to do whatever he could to help his family, his friends, and the citizens of Fargo.
It was also reported that Jason's organs were donated as well, and Chief Cebulski said the man who received Jason's heart had planned on coming to the event today, but he actually ended up having an unrelated health issue that prevented that from happening. He also said that the police department is supported in remembering their fallen officers now on a yearly basis at a remembrance event in the nation's capital. So that will continue to happen.
Really through the generous support of our Fargo Police Foundation, we're in a position to continue to send officers out to the National Law Enforcement Memorial, hopefully every year, so that Jason is not only remembered here in Fargo, but his spot on that law enforcement wall.
As heartbreaking and tragic as the situation was, it's a heartwarming reminder that Jason is living on and giving somebody else a second chance of life. And a good reminder to fill out that organ donation form when you get your driver's license renewed, because you just never know who it might help. And Danielle, I apologize, but speaking of tragic events in the Fargo police, they have been working on a pretty puzzling case this year, of course, with the West Fargo police and other agencies as well, of the disappearance of a young woman out of West Fargo. And I was pretty surprised last night to see that they finally had made an arrest in connection to that.
Yeah, so they're going from the remembrance today to a news conference this afternoon about that. So Isadora Wengel, she was last seen in West Fargo on January 5th. She was reported missing a couple of days later. And both the Fargo and West Fargo police departments have been working on this and continually asking for help from the public. The investigation has included an apartment complex in South Fargo, a landfill outside of Fargo, and then they were also asking the Detroit Lakes, Minnesota area for any tips or information they may have about the case. Last night, we learned a 21-year-old man named Joshua Alexander Height was arrested in connection to that disappearance, and he is facing murder charges. So as of this record, so right now, we don't know much more than that, but Fargo Police is holding that press briefing today about that. So we'll have some more details in our other reporting.
And we know you guys in the newsroom will follow that story and others making waves in Fargo and North Dakota at large. Speaking of that, what else has been making news this week, Danielle?
Each classroom is going to get a small library of books about the founding of our country.
A Fargo area teacher was awarded some money to work on a project for the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence this year.
The largest state agency is participating, the Department of Health and Human Services.
19 state agencies are opting in to a voluntary separation program. This is ahead of some looming budgetary issues that could be facing North Dakota in the next biennium.
Brock Nelson, Jake Sanderson, who were both UND hockey standouts. TJ Oshie will actually be going as a broadcast analyst.
And some athletes at the Winter Olympics have some ties to UND.
Oh, that's so cool. I did see that about the ski jumper being a UND student. And of all the Olympic events, I do wonder, how does one decide that they want to try ski jumping, that they want to risk life and especially limb doing that sport?
Yeah.
I feel like I need some average people attempting some of these things so we get a feel about how incredible these athletes really are. That'd be fun. Watch me try to go down that thing. I mean, if you want a sight gag, there you go. As usual, lots of things going on in the headlines today and every day. Thank you, Danielle, for keeping us up to speed on that.
You bet. Be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more news or check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
That's it for this week's Prairie Beat. I'm going to try my quadruple axle lutz or whatever they call it. I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
And remember, sign up now for our weekly podcast of Prairie Beat. It drops every Wednesday. Still to come on Main Street, the North Dakota Women's Business Center. Pro tip, they help men and women explore how coaching, funding, access, and community connections are helping entrepreneurs strengthen local economies across North Dakota. That's after this news. Today we are diving into the world of women-led business growth and community impact here in North Dakota. The North Dakota Women's Business Center has been a catalyst for entrepreneurs statewide, offering coaching, resources, and connection to help business owners thrive. And with us are two of the leaders who are driving that mission. First, Christy Dower. She's the executive director, a natural leader with over a decade of management experience, who motivates teams, builds strategic partnerships, and champions impactful programming that benefits communities across the state. Christy, welcome to Main Street.
Thanks for having us, Craig.
We are happy that you're with us. And also my friend Paige Shockman is with us. She brings a passion for rural community development to everything she does, from grant proposals and community programming to exploring tech solutions that streamline operations and deepen connections. Paige, welcome to Main Street.
Thanks, Craig. I am so psyched to be here right now.
We are happy that you are with us. All right, let's talk about your work. First, Christy, you can start. What is the North Dakota Women's Business Center?
So the North Dakota Women's Business Center is a statewide nonprofit. Craig, we just celebrated 25 years, so we're pretty excited of the statewide impact. We exist to serve the main streets. And what that looks like is access to technical assistance, coaching, trainings, and programming like our annual summit.
What drew you to work with the North Dakota Women's Business Center, Christy?
So actually, I started as a volunteer back in 2015, and then had an opportunity and kind of some life events back in 2018. And so reached out to the Women's Business Center, and they had an opening and they were developing a Fargo office. And so I joined as a full-time employee in January of 2019.
And Paige, what about you? Your background blends rural community development, storytelling, and strategic tool use, I guess. How do those elements help you in your role? And tell us what your role is.
Community engagement and operations manager, right? That's kind of two ends of very different things. But what's been perfect for me is I love building processes, but I have to be with people. So I really, in my role, get to split my time 50% behind the desk, 50% out in the community. So I get to build process, build relationships, and then I get to dabble in a little bit of marketing. So a lot of it is just helping people understand who we are, what we do, and why we're doing it every day.
How do you guys actually do your work? How do you support women entrepreneurs across the state, not just here in Eastern North Dakota?
Our work is really about economic mobility, confidence building, community building, and then removing barriers as it relates. The number one reason clients come to our center is access to capital. However, we don't have a loan program. And so what we do is right now, what we're doing is we've collected over 930 data points from small businesses that are saying, you know, if we don't find $50,000 or less of capital, they face closing. And so we've seen our main streets and the importance of small business to our main streets, Craig. And that's really scary, that lack of access to capital could threaten the fabric of our communities.
So you're not just working with folks who are interested maybe in starting a business, but you're working with folks who really might need some assistance in continuing what they've been doing maybe for a while.
I keep going back to this analogy of a map. So maybe somebody that needs that roadmap or a partner, as they navigate the challenges. And a lot of our program is built from the resources that our clients tell us that they need. So you think of those 2 a.m. thoughts that are keeping you up as a business owner. You know, do I clean my restaurant fryer tonight, or do I look at a change in staffing or what that might look like to pay my rent? Rent has been a really popular trend as of late. And how do you navigate those decisions? And we're not here to solve the business decision for them. What we hope to do is provide the resources and tools to help them make the informed business decision for themselves.
So how do people reach out to you? What's that first call look like?
Absolutely. So Chrissy hit on it a little bit earlier, but we offer business coaching. It's completely free, totally confidential. So we like to have people start there. It lets us get that baseline. We get some data from them, who they are, what they're doing, and why they're doing it. It just lets us make sure that we can connect them with the right business coach and then help them ideate from there. The other thing is sometimes we may not have the right person on our staff, but we know who they can connect with. So we have partners around the state. You know, think of any other initials that we might have. They're there to be additional partners to our clients. And so we may not have all the answers, but we definitely know somebody who does.
Give me some example of business types that people have come to you with so that our listeners can understand, geez, my idea here may not be that off the wall to come and ask for assistance.
Well, one thing I want to hit on before we jump into an actual list, Craig, is a common misconception that you brought up earlier. So our name, right, the North Dakota Women's Business Center, we actually serve everybody. So in 2025, 12% of our clients were male.
And you welcome them.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. If you think about it, it's just that we are tailored towards women, but we will gladly help anybody who needs it. So anybody, I think we'll hit on some of those industries here in a second, but I just wanted that kind of out of the way. Craig, sure. If you've got a business idea burning in your back pocket, call me. We'll help you out.
Give me an idea of the type of businesses that come to you.
Anything from, hey, I've got this side hustle that I'm looking to do. Maybe I'm working a career, but maybe I want to, just have some spending money, right? Or, gosh, childcare is really expensive and I need to think of, you know, alternative strategies there for my own financial freedom. And so some of those side hustles to, you know, full-blown brick and mortar. And so they can be an LLC. We don't tell them the best type of business entity, but what we can do is help think strategically through that Secretary of State registration. So is it an LLC? Yeah, you know, maybe you're better off just with a trade name. We're not bankers, accountants, insurance, or legal. And so we call that your bail team. And we absolutely encourage, you know, those resources alongside your business as well.
Craig, what'll frequently happen is people think that we're serving stereotypical women-based industries, your boutiques, your salons, things like that. The one you always bring up that comes to my mind is the mobile meat processor.
Our clients are everything from the rural excellence of an ice skating rink up in Devil's Lake through the mobile meat processors and supporting agricultural industries, restaurants, construction, and professional services remain our top clients.
When you're giving assistance to different places, you talked about even HR type of assistance, non-capital assistance. Tell me more about that type of help that you can give to folks who are maybe not as well versed, maybe in certain types of their operation, but they have a great idea.
I imagine a lot of your listeners are small business owners, but I think as an employer myself, we often think of like, gosh, when is it right time to add another team member? And do I have the revenue to support that? Do I have the infrastructure to make sure that I've got workers' comp insurance and I've got, you know, all of the alphabet soup of deductions ready to be taken out of my quarterly taxes and those types of things. We have resources for the state of North Dakota and to kind of put that checklist together to make sure that you've got that list of support that way.
Enjoying my conversation with Christy Dower and Paige Shockman. They both are with the North Dakota Women's Business Center. And as we've learned, their assistant isn't just for women, but it is for certainly entrepreneurs statewide who are interested in maybe having some coaching, some resource referral, maybe even some networking and connections to help their businesses thrive. I'm thinking of a lot of things that come with owning a business, things like my online presence. Can you help there? Paige, I assume that's probably right up your alley.
Absolutely. Yep. So, I mean, things like marketing and how and where do you start with a website? What do you need when the internet is telling you that, you know, you have to be where you really realistically might be a year from now or 2 years from now? I think sometimes it's really easy, especially for small business owners, to get bogged down in feeling like they're not where they should be yet. But one of my favorite parts about the work that we do is that we get to meet everybody where they are, right? So if you're coming to us day one looking for that website, how can we get you on that first step? How can we get you from A to B? Because we're not going to try to jump from A to Z.
You have the Women's Business Summit version 2026 coming up. It's May 5 through 7. That's in Medora. Give me the vision behind the summit and what participants can expect, both from the attendance side and for those who are also presenting.
Craig, we really took a look at our programming in 2022, and we held listening sessions in all 8 regions of North Dakota. What we learned was that there was still this need and hunger for connection through small businesses, mostly Main Street small businesses. And we took that summit and we transformed it into something. And we intentionally chose Medora because what we found was that when we traveled to Medora, people typically checked their responsibilities upon entering the Rough Rider Hotel, right? And they were able to be fully present as it relates to thinking about what does cash flow strategies look like. Gosh, there's a snowstorm on Small Business Saturday. How do I make that up? The economic pressures that continue to evolve. We also have AI as a topic. You know, the big box stores that are coming and the pressures that they put on small businesses. How do we keep our small businesses thriving, ultimately keeping our dollars local and our communities vibrant? And so what does that look like? It's 2.5 days of hands-on learning. We often see people will bring their accountant statements and then actually sit down with a thinking partner of like, hey, this is where I'm at. This is where I want to be. And the magic before we send everybody out on May 7th is that we'll be able to put a growth plan together and really some actionable steps as they leave the summit this year. And then there's just so much that can be learned. We do have a little bit of fun, Craig. So you can bet that there's some horseback riding, maybe some exclusive tours. There is something magical about being on the back of a horse in the Badlands, thinking about, you know, what is my next strategic step of business? The summit is really about strategy, clarity, community, personal, professional growth, not just swapping business cards.
For someone who's maybe has had this idea of starting a business, what best advice would you give to them to gather some thoughts together before making that first call to you?
You know, Craig, the thing that I like to say is that the best time to call was yesterday, because what the structure and the nature of the programming that we provide for clients looks like is that foundational level. And so much of that is the building blocks for small businesses. So if you, the legal entity or the decisions you're making on negotiating contracts, I mentioned rent a little bit earlier as a trend that keeps coming up, making sure that you have some clarity around what is CAM, what is my business insurance, is that covered in CAM, and having some of those foundational aspects is always important. So we say that you can come to us with a napkin sketch, and maybe this is kind of what I was thinking. Our team is equipped with some resources, so we can pull some market data reports and we can say, hey, based on this industry, here's what we're seeing and here's where you might want to consider.
What I would ask people to come to us with is an open mind, because I think frequently, right, you get this idea, your passion is behind it, you're starting to get this energy, and you think you know everything. And that can be really challenging for our business coaches who have to kind of shine that light and say, hold up a minute. Here's the market analysis. This industry is really saturated. How are you going to differentiate? Okay, rent in your community is 3 times your current income. How are you going to afford that? Right? And so if I could ask everybody to come to us with an open mind to be able to hear what we have to say, I think we would see even greater success in our entrepreneurs who are willing to say, okay, I don't know everything, and that's why I'm coming to you.
I've had a great opportunity recently to visit with mayors across North Dakota. And what is just stunning to me is the number of programs that are available locally to help. Are you connected all across the state? Because there are some great programs that are available in some communities that aren't available in others. Can you help folks regardless of where they're at?
Williston Star Fund. You know what, Craig? Oh, that's some of the favorite work that I do. And that's why I joke that I office out of my car, because I love going to communities and challenging some of the thinking and challenging, you know, how border cities, how business decisions are affected by border communities. We've had both sides of that. We've had communities that are extremely responsive to the needs of small businesses. And we've had women tell us that they fear retribution from speaking out at their local community meetings, their commission meetings. And so what we do and our role in that is really intentionally building workshops, training, and resources where entrepreneurs can apply what they learn immediately. And so that's really what we try to do. One of the programs that I have to give a shout out to is that we're one of the 4 centers actually that hosts the Innovate ND program. And that's a $50,000 reimbursable grant for your small business.
For people who are interested either to maybe come to the Women's Business Summit, that's in Medora, May 5th through 7th, or want to learn more about what you do, where should they go?
They can check us out on our website, ND. Our Facebook is live and popping. I am on there all the time trying to get more people engaged. We've got an Instagram, we've got a LinkedIn. But more than anything, I would say come to our events. We have a program called Community Chapters in 5 communities across North Dakota. It's a version of our larger event called Strong Women, Strong Connections. And so our community chapters are a version in Jamestown, Velva, Bismarck, Grand Forks, and Fargo, where local community members have basically taken our programming and morphed it into what their community needs, right? Because the needs of Velva are not the same as the needs of Fargo. So if you're in those communities or near those communities, I would advise checking out those programs and getting to know the people that are running those. If you're a little nervous about reaching out to us, but otherwise call us 701-223-0707.
Is it ever the case, either Christy or Paige, that someone comes to you really excited about an idea, but you might tell them, I'm really sorry, but we don't think this will work or is worth your investment? Is that something that you maybe say sometimes in a very positive way, or do you maybe kind of help them maybe, as Paige said, have an open mind and look at something very, just a little bit differently?
You know, Craig, our role is to support the entrepreneur's dreams. And what that looks like is often giving them the tools to help them make informed business decisions. We have no way, in fact, I feel, you know, somewhat of a liability if we were to go out and say, hey, this absolutely won't work. Our goal is really to help champion and be a thought provoker, perhaps, of hey, here's some things to be cautious about, and here's some opportunities that we see that could be. We don't have all the answers, and we're supported by great ecosystems, and so we always encourage checking with your local economic development, regional councils, you know, tuning into, you know, podcasts and stuff like that, and see what's happening in your local communities and what's relevant that way, because we can't possibly have all the answers.
Well, I want to thank you both, Christy and Paige, for sharing your insights and passion with us today. And for our listeners eager to take that next step, whether you're launching a business, whether you're scaling operations or looking for a community of support, whether you're a man or whether you're a woman, you can, as they said, go to nd.com to learn more about their coaching resources and all of their events. And don't forget to save the date, May 5th through 7th in Medora for the North Dakota Women's Business Summit. It's a powerful opportunity to grow your network, sharpen your strategy, and connect with like-minded entrepreneurs from across the state. Christy and Paige, thanks.
Thanks so much, Craig.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, catch up on the news and stories from around the world, the nation, and here at home on All Things Considered. That's up next on Prairie Public. And if you're listening to us during the evening broadcast, keep it here for Travel with Rick Steves. That follows Main Street on Prairie Public.
The Fargo-Moorhead Symphony presents A Night at the Oscars, February 21st at the Fargo Theater. Conducted by Jane Lind Capistran, the program features the FM Choral Artist with music from Oscar-winning films. Information at fmsymphony.org.
This is Dakota Daybook for February 11th. Americans have always regarded George Washington with great reverence. It became a custom to celebrate his birthday. He was born on this date in 1731. Or was he? Congress designated February 22nd as the first federal holiday. In 1879, the first official celebration in honor of Washington's birthday took place. Upon becoming a state, North Dakota enthusiastically embraced the official holiday with community dinners and fireworks. Students in North Dakota schools, just like students in schools across the country, put on pageants and dutifully memorized Washington's farewell address. In 1951, the name President's Day was proposed as a day to recognize all those who had served in that office, but Congress never passed the proposal. It is often called President's Day. However, the official name remains Washington's birthday. The day was changed once again in 1968. The Uniform Monday Holiday Act rescheduled many federal holidays to Mondays, giving federal employees more three-day weekends and avoiding midweek confusion in scheduling. Under this law, Washington's birthday is now celebrated on the third Monday of February. North Dakota acknowledges Washington's birthday as a state holiday, and state offices are closed for the day. In 1922, the Grand Forks Herald reported that the great man's birthday is more complicated than it first appears. While researching archival material, a historian came across a forgotten diary written by Washington himself. The entry for February 11th, 1799 reads, "I went up to Alexandria to the celebration of my birthday. Many maneuvers were performed by the uniformed military companies and an elegant ball and supper at night." So how did this confusion arise? Was George born on this date, February 11th, in 1731? Or was he born on February 22nd, 1732? When George was born, Great Britain and all its colonies were still using the Julian calendar. The year began on March 25th, when Great Britain changed to the Gregorian calendar that we use today. The year began on January 1st. To make adjustments, 11 days were dropped from the calendar. George Washington's birthday moved from February 11th to February 22nd. So you can celebrate the first president on February 11th or February 22nd. Or on the third Monday of the month. And if you're a big George Washington fan, you can celebrate on all three. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
The Bismarck Mandan Civic Chorus presents a Valentine's Serenade on Saturday, February 14th at 7 p.m. at 1603 Main in Bismarck. The evening features favorites like Crazy Little Thing Called Love by Queen, Shower the People by James Taylor, and When She Loved Me from Toy Story 2, all while enjoying a meal and wine tasting, as well as a silent auction, door prizes, and an array of Valentine desserts. Seating is limited and tickets must be purchased in advance. More information at bismancivicchorus.com.
And that wraps up this Wednesday's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Tomorrow on Main Street, in a closer look with the Monitor, we'll look at how emergency petitions challenging ICE detentions are now appearing in North Dakota's federal courts, reflecting a sharp national rise in immigration enforcement. Plus, another edition of Tech with Peck. TV or projector? What's right for your space? That's tomorrow on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.